Welcome to Out of School, a podcast at the intersection of technology and education. My name is Fraser Spears, and I'm joined as always by Bradley Chambers. Tonight we get two sponsors for the show, and those are Jam Software and XMA. We'll tell you more about both of those as the show goes on. Bradley, what's up?
Long time no talk on the show.
It has been a while, hasn't it?
I think it's been since the WWDC show, but that's how summers usually work around here at Out of School headquarters. Mm-hmm. Like our traveling and conferences and things like that. So I spent a few days in Denver at ISTE, and then I was on vacation, and I think you were on vacation some as well. Mm-hmm. So yeah, good to be back. It is hot as I will get out in Chattanooga. It is like 91 degrees, but with the heat index, like with the humidity and all that, it's like over 100. And so Bill Naylor, friend of the show, like sent me a tweet. It's like, you know, because he's from Denver, and where I just wasn't. And so he's kind of asked, like, what is, you know, our humidity is like at 25%, like, you know. And basically, with the humidity in Chattanooga, just add 15 degrees to it. It feels okay. Like you're walking. So if it's like 90, it feels like 105 in all seriousness. Well, more than reality, probably like 100. So, like, I'll open up Dark Sky right now, and Dark Sky is real good about that. It feels like, so right now it's 96 and falling, but it feels like 103. Honestly, it's just misery here. Misery.
It's a nightmare.
I am so over the heat. I like have a 15 step walk from our building to my car, and I sweat in 15 steps.
Do you know, I never knew what humidity was until I went to America. Like, I don't mean like that. I don't mean that figuratively. I mean literally. I had no idea that there were places in the world where it felt like that outside. And I remember I was what age must I have been? I was 20 years old, I think, and I was going to a work placement in Philadelphia as part of my degree. And I landed at JFK, and I just walked out the front doors and walked into what felt like I had just opened the door of an oven into my face. I was like, what is this? I was completely unprepared for it. I didn't have any clothes that were suitable for that kind of climate at all. And I ended up spending the whole summer in a heat wave in Philadelphia in a house in a room that didn't have any air conditioning. So I was having like 3 showers a day. And I eventually got to the point where I was just going out to ride the bus to get into air conditioning for a while. And then I would just come back to the house and sweat for a while again. So that was my education in heat.
Yeah, it's misery because like when I was in Denver, I would look at the temperature and it would say 95, but it felt nice outside. And that's kind of like the only complaint I would have about Chattanooga at all is just that, just like the problem is like, you know, spring feels great, but then there's pollen everywhere. And then you get to June and there's no pollen. Well, June wasn't too bad, but then just July and August are misery. Like I don't like summer at all. I guess the problem is like when you're a kid, you just spend all summer at the pool. But I'm a grown up and like and it's like I just like my, I don't know, I have to like spend so much money watering my grass and my plants and stuff like that. Like I'm like, I mean, it's funny, like when you're a kid, you're sad it rains, and as a grown up, I'm like, sweet, it rains. That means I don't have to A, mow, and B, all my plants get watered. So I'm like texting my friends when I'm on my vacation, like asking about the weather.
Do you do anything like special at school for heat? Do you in terms of like facilities or cooling for servers or switches?
Well, our HVAC system was like $100,000. Like that's actually not the units itself. That is like the controllers for our systems. And so, but they saved us, like our power bill immediately went down $5,000 a month when we did that. Our building is 100,000 square feet, and that we have two buildings, and that, I'm not sure how big the other one is. It's pretty big though, but it's a bigger, like a newer building, so it's more HV, like kind of built to suit with sand weather. But we just have an old building, so what is nice about this one is we only heat and cool rooms that we're using, and so like it's not like you're having to like keep the whole build. I mean, like at home right now, like you know, either your house, your air conditioning is on or off, and you can't just say, hey, just keep our, you know, living room and our bedroom's cool. Like you can't, you know, it's one or the other, but like ours, there are all these zones. And so, just to save money, they only heat and cool the rooms like that we need. So that, but they can really focus on those because the units aren't having to keep the whole building cool. They're just having to keep the rooms that we need cool. Does that make sense?
Yeah, that does make sense. It's pretty sophisticated.
It's from it's called the Niagara. It's like the brand is Niagara, and I'm fairly certain Honeywell makes it. I mean, it's like, It's funny, like, it's kind of ironic that I bring this up because I'm working with a company called Zingbox right now, and this is something I'll talk about later, but they are an like IoT security company, and they sent me a they called me, like, they're just basically, it's a startup, and they it's from some, like, I know the CEO is like an ex-Aerohive guy, and so that's how he contacted me, and he's like, hey, we'd just love for you to try it. Like, it's just, I'm going to send you this thing. It's this little box you plug in. I plugged it into one of my core switches, and then I made that switch a mirror port. And so basically any traffic coming through that switch is mirrored to that mirror switch I made. And it's, since it's a core switch, so basically all the traffic. And what they do is they watch all your traffic coming in and out, and they help you identify, mm-hmm. like IoT devices, like the security, like, areas of them that are concerning for them. Like, you know, who's connecting to it and things like that. Yeah. Well, it's funny, they had five devices that they kind of like said, hey, you get some areas you should be concerned with. These are the two HVAC controllers, our security system, and our DVR, our CCTV system. So it was like no devices. It was just like, again, this is like the things that we should be concerned about, because it's not necessarily like mm-hmm. that the Macs are getting hacked. It's the HVAC controllers. It's the DVRs that have the security holes. And so it's funny, they're actually working with my our HVAC vendor to figure out exactly the minimal level of security or maximum level of security they can apply to this thing from our firewall, and it still function right. Mm-hmm. And so what Zingbox is doing, they're working on integration with firewall vendors where they can actually like apply these policies for you from Zingbox.
Okay. So they can add an additional layer of understanding. It's almost like virus definitions or something.
Pretty much,
for hardware.
Yeah, it's not like you have to, it's not like they tell you, hey, because that was the thing, they were like, we can show you this stuff. I'm like, oh, that's pretty cool. But then they got to talking as we were reviewing the results and said, okay, we already have integration with Palo Alto, but okay, now that we know you have SonicWall, we're going to start working on integration with SonicWall. So like it would be like you could click a button in Zingbox and apply changes to your SonicWall to kind of harden your
okay.
So yeah, it's more of IoT security, but that's something really that I've kind of started to think about, because as more of these things in our operations become on the network, we have to be concerned about them.
Absolutely. And I mean the second hard part of that is not just that, but when you do get a report like that, where is it? I mean, you're talking about the size of your building, like where is that thing that is, you know, causing a problem on the network?
Well, and I didn't, and those are things like I didn't buy. And these aren't vendors. Mm-hmm. These aren't even my vendors. And again, I mean, that's the thing about, and that's why like Internet of Things, like security is kind of scary, because you have these vendors that like networking is an add-on for them. Like the HVAC company, their bread and butter is HVAC stuff. Like everything else mm-hmm. is an add-on to them. Like it.
Well, wasn't that how Target got
hacked? It was.
Through their HVAC something, yeah.
So again, this is pretty cool. So it's zingbox.com, I think, Z-I-N-G. So that's something I'm looking at. If anybody, I think it's like they sent me a hardware device, but I think you can like run it on your own, like if you have a VMware infrastructure. And I think it's free right now, like as they're kind of, mm-hmm. I'm not sure what their ultimate business model is. It may be like kind of freemium type thing where you can like get the results for free, but then to have all the integration, maybe it's paid. Yeah, who knows? I'm not sure. But it's a really neat product, so looking at that. But yeah, it's like we got off on a tangent. But yeah, that's kind of something that's kind of starting to creep up for me, is everything is on the network now.
Yeah, these are the issues. How do we get there from talking about the weather? But
yeah, anyways. But
you're right. Absolutely. It's something that is just going to be more and more of an issue as, you know, I mean, we've lived with for a while the idea that the network extends beyond the walls of the building, for example, with Wi-Fi. But then we at least sort of knew, well, it's computers, right? And how many computer platforms are there? And now it's not just computers anymore. It started off with phones and then tablets, obviously. And then now it's, you know, could be anything. It's got a chip and a Wi-Fi connection in it as well. So, yeah, area of concern. Yeah.
So, get back to the topic today. You and I both are inside of Apple School Manager, and we're working on our new deployments. And so, I've gotten all of my iPads enrolled into our MDM, and so it's 160 mm-hmm. of them, and I believe you have as well, correct?
Just about. We're kind of in the middle. We had a split shipment of our devices, so we got our iPad Pros on Tuesday, and today is Thursday. We're recording, and I'm expecting our iPad Minis tomorrow. So it's basically two thirds and one third, right? So we had, we got 94 iPad Pros, 9.7 inch iPad Pros delivered, and we're expecting 31 iPad Minis tomorrow. So I'm pretty relaxed about it. I mean, I think you as well, Bradley, but I think we've had a really great experience of deployment this year.
Yeah, once I got some, I had some things inside of Apple Configurator that had to get worked out with some help of enterprise support, but I think, I'm not sure exactly what that was, but yeah, I had to call them for a quick 20-minute phone call and we got it fixed. So I guess let's kind of, you know, let's, before we start about, we're talking about like, you know, kind of the actual workthroughs we've gone through, I want to talk about Apple's Call Manager. And we're both in that. And that's been the big question this summer. And, you know, I was told in early May we were going to get invites within 2 to 3 weeks. And that obviously, like, did not happen.
And, yeah, those days came and went.
Yeah, they? And June came and went. I mean, you know, May came and went and June came and went. And I, so basically, and I still, the thing that's concerning to me is I still never got an email from Apple about the migration to Apple's Call Manager. And like I was told, and so I, you know, only thing, like you told me, hey, log in, or maybe it was another listener, like, hey, log into your deploy.apple.com account and there's a migration. So I did that and I got migrated. First thing that stuck out to me is it's marked as preview. And this isn't like, you know, Apple preview isn't Google preview and like Google beta. I mean, Google will leave products in beta for years, but this is marked as preview. And so that is concerning to me, number one, because that seems to me like, things aren't going to work perfectly, and we may not have an answer if they don't. And now, again, I'm just talking, like, guessing there.
I kind of felt similarly. You could see that there was some, it was like they had just got it to the line and no more in time for what, just about time for school to start, you know. Because obviously we need time to, you know, decide how we're setting things up and, you know, then log into some iPads with those Apple IDs and see what works and see what doesn't and see what's weird and so on. My experience was kind of similar. Like everything migrated correctly, right? And I think this was perhaps the sort of first order of concern for Apple was how can they sort of reliably take a volume purchase program account and a device enrollment account and get them across to this new infrastructure. And that part for us worked really, really well. The importing of users worked quite well. I had a couple of situations where I had to redo an import, not because the import failed as much as because the kind of UI part of the site froze on me while I was doing it. So it's all that kind of early stage stuff. But in terms of once the Apple IDs were created, using them on the iPad was reasonably straightforward. It was you're essentially given a temporary password for every user, and then as part of the setup assistant, when you go into the Apple ID screen, if you're using a managed Apple ID with a temporary password, you just get prompted to change your password as part of the iOS setup system. So it's fairly well integrated with iOS in that respect, and then it's just a matter of seeing what's possible after that.
One of the big things was like import from your student information system, and one vendor is supported currently. It's a company called SunGard, and I guess it's like their platform is eSchool Plus. Never heard of it. I don't know if you've heard of that, but I have never heard of that. And so I didn't expect it to be populated with like 10 vendors, but I expected like more than one. No PowerSchool, which was interesting considering Apple owned it 15 years ago or so, or maybe 20 years ago.
Yeah. That's been a while now, hasn't it? Yeah. I think it's clear to me that the SIS import stuff has been perhaps the most challenging part of all of this. Because it's the bit where, you know, Apple School Manager is here and there's basically nothing going on in that area at all. So CSV import seems to be the order of the day again. And which is fine for me because that's all I was ever going to do. But for people who, you know, are going to try and migrate like 5,000 users into that, that's an interesting challenge.
It's not feasible. I mean, when you're talking like if you have these big districts, like I'm even thinking like there's no way I can do this with school starting less than a month, and I have 300 kids. If I had 3,000 kids, like it's just. And so my point was, I guess my thinking is mid July too late for the 2016-2017, you know, school year? I mean, my thoughts are, could they have said or, you know, when they announced iOS 9.3 and all these features, could they have said, hey, a preview's coming this summer? And with full rollout 2017-2018, I would have been fine. Like that would have made more sense to me, because again, preview to me says like this isn't fully ready. And I don't know. Maybe I was I'm not. I don't think I'm expecting too much. Almost as like it's almost like I think they overpromised what was going to be there.
Yeah, I think a little bit as well. You know, if they had just said, look, it's CSV import and that's it, right? And not spent time doing that other stuff, then perhaps that might have been a little bit better. But I mean, if you're an Apple Education sales rep and people have been chewing you out for like 4 years about how to make Apple IDs, and then that happens and it's like, oh yeah, there's a year preview for this new thing, so like, you know, 18 months from when we announced that you're going to be able to actually do this, people would probably have freaked out even more. So they were under a lot of pressure and have been under a lot of pressure in that period running up to the 9.3 announcement, I think, in terms of certainly in the US and from schools going to Chromebook, for example, because, like, you know, making accounts in Google Apps is like, it's so easy, I haven't even bothered to think about it yet. You know, I'll do it in like 5 minutes, and that'll be it done. And Apple School Manager needs to get to that level of simplicity. My only big actual complaint about Apple School Manager from what I've had to do with it so far is that you can't just set a password for somebody. You can only set a password policy, and then it will generate a temporary password, and then the user has to create their own password. And for me, that's like an unnecessary step of complexity, because we're used to with Google Apps just saying, you know, here's your password, just use that password and it's fine. So I would like to be able to do that as well. But
yeah, you could create like a very, very simple temporary passcode. You know, maybe your school initials and then the year, just something that you can tell every kid. Like, you know, you can hand out and you can say, this is your temporary password, and then they go in there and set a more complex one.
Yeah, but I want to set the final password. I don't want them to have to go through a reset step if I don't have to.
That's a good point. That's kind of my thoughts there. I'm
very glad I'm not doing shared iPad this year, to be honest. In fact, I'm glad I'm not doing it at all, but, you know, if I was doing shared iPad, I would think about waiting.
Well, you're betting your school year on a product that's marked as preview, and it may work perfectly, and it may not. But it's a tricky situation, and I guess I'm thankful that there is device based app assignment.
Yeah, that part seems to be reasonably solid. I mean, that's a feature of 9.3, and that's been worked on for a while now. You know, so we're up to the third bug fix release on iOS 9.3, and that seems to be working very well for me and working very well in Jamf as well. So we're definitely going over to that as well.
I don't guess we've seen any news about iCloud storage for Manage Apple IDs yet.
No, that has been quiet for a while now. I don't know. I didn't learn anything at WWDC about that either, except that people know that it's an issue. You know, no wonder they know it's an issue. They've probably heard about it every 5 minutes for the past 5 years. But the thing for me, right, is I'm looking at this going, how many people in my school are actually going to get a managed Apple ID this year? Yeah. And I think what it is probably going to be is it's going to be a small section of users who are young enough to never have been given their full Apple ID for themselves, but who are old enough to want to use iTunes U. And that's basically 4 year groups in the middle of the school, if you like. I would like to move more people to managed Apple ID, but I think I'm going to try and play it safe for those kids who are older and who have already got their own Apple ID. I'm just going to actually have them keep using that, and I'll try and migrate the new users coming in to use managed Apple ID. But then it'll only be a few people's, rather than, you know, I'm not putting out 100 Apple IDs or whatever. I'm putting out 30 maybe,
right,
at this point. Yeah.
So that's my thoughts on Apple School Manager. So let's take a sponsor break, and we'll come back and talk about some deployment stuff. Thank the fine folks at Jamf Software. We're going to talk about them a lot today, but they provide enterprise tools that power widespread use of Apple technologies in your school, Macs, iPads, iPhones. Just a great platform. You can host it yourself. You can have them host it for you. You can run it on, you know, a Mac on your own campus. You can run it on a hosted Mac Mini somewhere. You can host it on Apple, Amazon Web Services. Again, it's very, very, very stable pretty much everywhere. I can't say enough about how well it's working with our new deployment. I've been rock solid. We're going to talk about this in a minute, but just seamless import with the device enrollment program. So again, if you're looking for MDM for your new deployment, check out Jamf Software and the Casper Suite. Works with, again, Macs, iPads, iPhones, and Apple TVs. Check them out at jampsoftware.com. That's jamfsoftware.com. So, we got you wrote a blog post, was it 90 minutes, 90 iPads in 90 minutes on your blog on spears.org. Yep. So let's kind of break that down on how we're mm-hmm. on how we're doing this from delivery to getting into configurator.
Yeah, so this is the constant thing that you and I have, Bradley, is I'm envious of the way that your iPads get delivered. And I heard from some people on Twitter that you know, you get your 10 packs, right? You, the sort of frustration-free version of Apple packaging. We don't get that in the UK for some reason, and I don't know why not. But I heard from some people on Twitter that it was available in Australia, for example. So there are some geos outside of the US that do get them, but the UK apparently is not one. So what happens is a guy rings the doorbell and it's the guy from the TNT Courier and he's like, hey, I've got a pallet for you. Let's just drop it on the pavement. And I'm like, yeah, okay, right. Drop it on the pavement. So he rolled it up to the door and there's like five steps up from the street to the door of our school and just left it there. I was like, okay. So I end up just, I had to cut the pallet open on the street and just, you know, lift them in 5x5. But every device came in the retail box inside another cardboard box. So I ended up having like 90 odd cardboard boxes plus 90 retail boxes, then eventually to get 90 iPads. So that's the usual unpacking experience in the UK. Yeah. And it turned out to be by far the slowest and most annoying part of the entire deployment. But it worked out well in the end. I mean, there wasn't any problem with it. It's just slow. But I had a couple of colleagues come and help me, and that was great.
Well, and you know, with me, I think I mentioned before, it was like two guys in a white van, and they actually brought them into my office. But yeah, I mean, it was 16 boxes for 160 iPads. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's frustration-free packaging, but it's still a lot of work getting them unboxed. Like, and you know, my chargers come separately in their own boxes. They're with all 10 of them, and then they're in brown boxes. But gosh, getting rid of those like was terrible too. And it was a lot of boxes to get rid of.
Yeah. I was actually quite happy with the box situation though, because you know, my iPads for India project that I'm working on, I had no idea how I was going to get those iPads boxed and sent to India. So I managed to keep and reuse all those brown cardboard boxes for the iPads that are going out. So that actually turned out to save a problem for me.
That's a good point. I didn't think about that.
Yeah. Yeah, because I was sitting here going, this project looks like it's going to be funded, and I do not know how to ship these to India. So I'm just going to reuse the pallet that they sent the new ones on.
So you feel like, it's basically like when you have a Kickstarter and you get funded and you don't know what you're going to do with that.
Yeah, I have no idea how to manufacture anything, but I've got $1 million, so there we go.
So we got delivery, we got unpacking. So, you know, again, you've got mm-hmm. the retail boxes, we've got bulk packaging, basically. So step one here, and you did this differently than me, and so you did your OS updating. Well, I guess I'll clarify. Both of our iPads came with the same version of iOS. Both of them were on 9.3.2. 9.3.3 mm-hmm. just came out, which we presume is the final version of iOS 9.
Yeah, I think you can tell by the amount of time that's spent in testing that this is like the last iOS 9 there's going to be, particularly also the time of year as well.
Well, and it's good because we can like get them updated and know they're going to be updated on day one of school. So yeah. You did your OS updating in Configurator, and you were doing how many at mm-hmm. a time? 20 at a time?
I was doing 20 at a time. I actually had more hubs than that, but I found that above 20, everything started to get a little bit unstable. And you spent too much time sort of going, well, 3 out of these 27 didn't work. Which 3 are they? You know, whereas if I just limited it to 20, I had 2 10-port hubs. And if I just limited it to those 20, then everything worked pretty much every time. So it was 20 at a time. So that was, you know, what, four and a half batches, if you like, to go through that whole set. And it worked really well.
Yeah, and I did my OS updating over the air with JSS, and it worked fairly well. So, again, I was going from 9.3.2 to 9.3.3, and like it probably half of them worked, and this is after they were all in DEP and enrolled, and they all got the command. It's some of them like, and I don't know if it's because I basically overloaded my access point, and I had like 168, you know, my APs can see, or my iPads where they're at my office can see like 2 access points. And I think I just basically kind of overloaded them with trying to do too much at once in the iPads.
Yeah.
Some of them failed on the verification, and some of them I had to do that twice. Like I had to try to get it to verify the update twice. And so probably half of them took over the air, and the rest of the half, like I just, as I was like, I guess I had one I have 160 iPads, and when I finished, I had 159 in JSS, and so there was one that, for whatever reason, it wasn't in the MDM. And so I was basically, what I did today is went through every iPad, was checking its OS. If it wasn't done, I was hitting the update, and then finally found the one that needed to re-enroll. So what I was doing is I was doing, so configurator, applying the blueprint, which we'll talk about in a minute, with the pre-stage enrollment from JSS, and then got it in there, and then did the OS updating after the fact. I kind of wish I'd done your method. I was doing 7 at a time. I had one powered hub, so I was doing 7 at a time. It's got 12 slots, and it's one of those kind of high-powered ones, but I found when I got over 7, it was the same thing as you. Like, things got way more unstable, and it just wasn't worth it. So 7 with my hub was good.
Yeah, so I did it through Apple Configurator. So what I would do is I'd plug in 20 iPads, just wait till they all appeared, and make sure the key trick there is to count that there is actually 20 in visible as well, because you're seeing a big list, and there is actually a status bar at the bottom you can tap to see how many devices are in the view you're looking at. Select all, and then there's basically a button for restore and a button for apply whatever blueprint you want. Now, one thing that I made a mistake on, which I didn't write about in the blog because I wrote the blog before I realized my mistake, was that I forgot that these iPads all ship with iWork and iLife pre-installed, right? And what I had done was, for some iPads, I had used the restore button in configurator, which essentially does like a complete wipe of the device and reinstalls iOS, but nothing else. And then for other iPads, I had done an update, which is just obviously updates the operating system. It doesn't change any of the data that's there. And I realized the day after that I had about, you know, 50 or 60 devices which had unmanaged applications installed on them, which I didn't want, right? Because, I mean, I could have taken over the management of them through MDM, but that would have required that I had to scope, like, numbers, for example, into every iPad and then take it back off again. So I thought it was easier, given how quickly I could do it. I just got all the iPads back, and I just wiped them all, and I did them all again in about 2 hours. So it wasn't too hard to do that, but that was the kind of first mistake I made, was to not restore everything out of the box, rather just updating it. And that was something that I wanted to avoid.
Well, yeah, and this is like the 2 hours of your life, but hey, you got a good story out of it.
Yeah, I watched TV while I was doing it. You know, it's not 2 hard hours either. It's 2 very, very simple hours, you know. So
we're going to talk about some MDM tricks. So let's talk about pre-stage enrollments. And so this is my first time obviously doing this. And so you and I kind of Skyped, mm-hmm. I guess it was last week, and I was getting mine built. And so you get some tips here. Don't use automatic naming in pre-stage. Why is that?
So the idea about pre-stage enrollment, right, is that this is you defining the setup experience for the user. And what this does is, when the device tries to set up, Apple's server sends it to your MDM for proper configuration and then returns control back to the user. And what you can do is, as your device is enrolling in the MDM, there are features in the Casper suite that let you do things like give each iPad that comes through this gate, if you like, a name from a list. You can apply a custom name to it. You can set metadata about the devices in JSS and so on. And it was kind of appealing to me, like, well, I could just name my devices through the pre-stage, but I thought, no, hang on a minute, I can probably do that better later on, and I'll talk in a little while about what I actually did. But I just left it as a default name, so every iPad came in just enrolled as iPad. And then what that enabled me to do was, from all the devices that were in my JSS, I could say, well, all of the ones that are called iPad, those are unallocated, unnamed devices that have just been enrolled. And I could actually use that as a key to search on to capture those devices and do something with them later on. So that's kind of my pro tip with pre-stage, is not to do too much to any individual device at that point.
And so mine were the same way. And so what I'm doing, I think you're doing a more simple method, but as I kind of allocate my devices into where the grades are going in, I'm going there and kind of manually grouping them together with their asset tag and their device name.
Yeah, so we're actually not specifically doing any kind of hard asset tag on our devices. We're just leaning on JSS to be the record of that information. What we are doing, though, is we're doing a kind of soft asset tag. And I thought we'd maybe talk in detail, Bradley, about how I set that up. because it's a pretty cool iOS 9.3 feature, and it was actually an integral part of getting the deployment as quick as it was through this whole process, right? So in iOS 9.3, there's a new configuration profile payload called lock screen message. And what you can do with that is you can put text in there, and when a supervised device gets that profile on the home screen, on the lock screen, sorry, of the iPad, that message appears basically. Right? So what I wanted to do was I wanted to have a dynamic soft asset tag on the lock screen of the iPad that shows who owns the iPad. So if the iPad is allocated to a user in Casper, I want it to say this iPad is assigned to, and then that person's name. And if it's not assigned to anybody, I want it to say this iPad is currently not assigned. So what you can do in Casper is you can have a search or a smart group that says all devices where the username is blank, for example. So that was my group for unassigned devices. And then I had another one for assigned devices, which was username is not empty. Okay, so in this way, I can scope something to both of those groups. So the unassigned devices got a profile that said this iPad is not assigned. And then as soon as I created a user in GSS, what I would do is I would scope the this iPad is assigned to profile, and I would scope that to every individual user. Okay, so when I create a user and assign the user to the iPad, they bring along their profiles, and their profiles get applied to the iPad as well as the ones that are scoped to the iPad. So as soon as I assign the iPad to somebody, that iPad would no longer be unassigned, so it would lose the this iPad is not assigned profile, and it would be assigned, so it would gain the user's profile, and it would say this iPad is assigned to April Spears, for example. Yeah? With me so far?
Yeah, I think so.
So the magic part of this is that when you bring along a configuration profile to an iPad in Casper, it will actually search and replace placeholders in the settings of the configuration profile to customize a profile for every different iPad, right? So this is how I get to the point where it says this iPad is assigned to April Spears, because what I do in the one profile, you might think, well, I've got to make 150 profiles for every pupil or whatever, but you don't, you just make one. And the message is actually, this iPad is assigned to dollar username, and Casper will substitute the user's full name for that placeholder in the profile and then send a different profile out to every individual iPad with the exact name on it. So this way, back up to why am I trying to do this? Well, I've got, 60 iPads in a box. None of them have been through the configuration, through the setup profile yet. They're sitting at the swipe to setup screen, the white screen that you see when you first open an iPad. But at the bottom, it says this iPad is assigned to April Spears. So this is how I managed to do it so quickly, was that I had enrolled all 91 iPads, but they're just enrolled in Casper. They're not allocated to any user. They're all just called iPads. And then as soon as I assigned them to somebody, they became somebody's iPad, and that actually showed up on the screen. So how did I do that assignment? Well, I actually wrote a Python script that would talk to the GSS API. Now, I don't know if you looked at the API for Casper at all, Bradley? No. So what there is there's actually an HTTP REST API that you can actually script against in every GSS, right? So you can make calls or whatever, and actually manipulate structures in the GSS through scripting. So what I did was I wrote a script. I had a CSV file with usernames and serial numbers. So I took all the serial numbers that I had enrolled, and I put them against these users in a CSV file. And then for every row in the CSV file, my script just said, make a user with this username and assign it to this iPad with a serial number. And what that did was it created 90 odd users and then assigned each one of them to an iPad, and then what it also did was it set the iPad's device name to that user's name as well. So in that way, I had all my iPads with a user, with a name, and the iPad also device being named for that user as well. And that script takes about 30 seconds to run. And that was how I went from having to pick up 90 iPads and set them up individually to just having that all done automatically. And that was, to me, that was the thing that actually, that took the deployment from easy but a bit boring to just completely trivial. It was a really, really big win.
So this is a dumb question. Like, okay, so I'm setting a manual name on all my devices, kind of just how I group mm-hmm. them. if I, like, in the asset tag information on the lock screen message, would I just do, is it like, is how'd you find out what those categories are? Like, where'd you...
It's documented in the user guide for Casper. So there's a part in the configuration profile documentation where it tells you what all the dollar substitutions are that you can have.
I wonder if it's just name dollar sign name for device name.
I think it's device name for the device's name and username for the full name of the user that's assigned to the device.
All right, I'm gonna have to look that up. So Casper Suite,
yeah,
administrator's guide. Okay, hey, good to know. Tips for later.
Mm-hmm. No, it was a cool trick. And then what that meant was that I had a big, big stack of iPads and to split them up into class groups, I just picked it up and said, well, who does this belong to? Well, they're in that class, they're in this class. So you just kind of did a little bit of a postman's job, if you like, putting each iPad into the right class for the right person. So that was the bit that made this a huge, big win. Yep.
Very cool, very cool. Okay, so what's next?
So the next idea is about locking in the first change to some setting, right? And there's three that you might want to think about. Locking in the device name, locking in the Apple ID that's signed in, and the passcode as well, right? So what we're trying to do here is we're trying to customize a setting and then prevent the user from changing it from the first setting that was made, yeah? So device name, for example, I want people to be able to change it away from iPad, but I don't want it to be changed after that, right? So I basically want my script to change it, and then the user doesn't get the option to change it. So there's two ways that you can lock a device name in iOS. One is some MDMs, Casper included, have the ability to enforce a device name on a device that's supervised. That works, but it only works at check-in. What it doesn't do is it doesn't prevent the user from then changing the name again. All it does is when the device next checks into the GSS and the GSS notices that the device name is different from what it thought it should be, it will set it back. But there is actually a configuration option where you can actually prevent the user from having the ability to edit it on the device. And what I wanted to do was I wanted to be able to set the username, or the device name, sorry, and then deliver a profile to a device that had its name set, yeah? So what we're looking for here is kind of like the named and unnamed iPads, I'm looking for using those same groups to scope a profile that says, you're not allowed to change this device's name. And I want that to be sent to every device, except for the ones that are called iPad, yeah? So what I'm doing with this profile is I'm scoping it to all devices, and then I'm using the exclusions feature in Casper to say all devices except all the ones that are called iPad. Yeah. So what that gets me is as soon as the user changes the name, or as soon as my script changes the name away from iPad and the device does another inventory, Casper will send it a profile that says, okay, now you can't change that name. And that's one of these sort of techniques for locking in the first change to something. And that's actually been very useful. I've used the same technique for Apple ID, right? Because what you don't want is you don't want the user to be able to sign out of their managed Apple ID, sign into a consumer Apple ID, download a bunch of other apps, and then sign back into their managed Apple ID as if nothing had happened. So, but at the same time, you can't just lock out account changes before an Apple ID has been signed into, right? So what you want to do is you want to leave that profile, scope it to everybody, but key off of the iTunes Store account is active piece of information for every device. So only devices where it's not active are you allowed to change the account. And then as soon as the iTunes ID becomes active, you stop people changing the account again. And we do the same thing for passcode as well. So that's a pretty useful technique overall.
Well, because, you know, going back to, you know, the device name, the default is that the devices check into Casper once a week. Mm-hmm. But depending on the size of your deployment, that may be, gosh, too much. Like if you've got a 10,000 device deployment, you may not want them checking in every day. You may do once a week.
Yeah. And the default's once a day, and then you can space it out. You can set it to longer than that. You can't set it to less than that, though, I don't think.
You can't.
So you can't have them checking in every 5 minutes.
I almost would like to check in, I don't know, like, you know, I guess once a day is the same, but like maybe check in, you know, something a little bit more granular, like check in every iPad, like my size deployment, check in every iPad between, I don't know, like 5 and 8 p.m. or something. I don't know. You know, I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah, that's one of the things. It's not actually possible to say when you wanted to check in. And ideally, you would want to have your iPads check in during the school day, because that's when they're most likely to be on a working network, right? And that's one of the reasons why inventory can sometimes get stale. Say, like, somebody goes home at Friday at 4 o'clock, their iPad runs out of battery, and they don't actually charge it up till Sunday night. You can have a couple of days there where you don't get any inventory on the device. One of the ways around that, Bradley, is to use iBeacons. Don't know if you've seen this kind of thing in Casper.
Yeah, I have.
Yeah. So what you can do in Casper is you can actually register the unique ID of an iBeacon. Now, if you don't know what iBeacons are little battery-powered Bluetooth pingers, if you like, and what they do is they just announce that they are there, and then it's up to a mobile device to do something with that information. So if you're using the self-service app in Casper, as I am now, which is really cool, what you can do is you can say, when the device sees this particular iBeacon, then the app can actually take some action based on that. And one of the things you can do is you can actually push profiles to devices as soon as they see a particular iBeacon. So if you walk into a particular classroom where there's a beacon stuck on the wall, you could push a profile that says, okay, in this classroom, you're not allowed to use the camera, for example, if you wanted to. But one of the other things you can prompt a device to do is you can prompt a device to check in its inventory. So this is one way that, you know, you and I were both talking about, Bradley, that we could maybe get more up-to-date inventory or more reliable inventory, is to place an iBeacon somewhere in the school that when pupils walk past it with their device will see the beacon and check in its inventory. So that might be something that we could work on and see if it works.
Yeah, that would be like, put them at your main school entrances or something like that.
Yeah, in the lunch hall or something like that, wherever people go with their device during the day.
Before we move on, let's thank our last sponsor of the day. This episode of Out of School is sponsored by XMA. XMA is a leading Apple solution expert for education. As an Apple solution expert, XMA is perfectly positioned to support your institution with help with deployments of Macs and iPads. They have over 30 years of experience, and this has allowed them to create the unique AllLearn program. AllLearn with Apple supports you with planning, financing, and an ongoing management of your iPad and Mac deployment. XMA can use their accredited trainers to deliver Apple professional development workshops to teachers and staff to ensure that you get the best results from your products. To learn more about that, visit xma.co.uk/out of school or follow them on Twitter at @wearexma. Again, that's xma.co.uk/out of school. Thanks to XMA for sponsoring Out of School this week.
Any more JSS tricks?
Okay, I'll have a link in the show notes for the JSS user guide. The PDF version, it's like page 531 is where you can get the shortcuts. So I think I'm actually going to do the asset tag one. So I'm using $. I think it's asset_tag. So I'm like literally, I've already found this and I'm pushing it out, and it's asset_tag. So $asset_tag. And that'll be on the lock screen, and it's currently pushing out to 79 of 160. So it's pushing out right now.
I have got one other trick that I don't know if I'm proud of this or not yet. I'll tell you when school starts whether it's been a good idea, but it's the idea of a lockdown profile. And this isn't so much a disciplinary thing, but sometimes there might be situations that arise where a device gets into a state that you're really not happy with, right? And, you know, some examples of this might be that the Casper self-service app has detected that the device has been jailbroken, for example. Or if you have an app that's been installed that you just cannot accept being in the school for some reason. What I designed was a profile that would basically shut the iPad down until an administrator sort of intervened and fixed it for the pupil or got a chance to look at it. And of course you can just like shut down an iPad as such, but what I designed was, you know, in iOS 9.3 there's a configuration profile where you can say only allow these apps, right? So what I did was I designed a profile that just said only allow these apps, and the only app that was allowed was the Casper self-service app. Every other app would disappear. Now, the apps aren't deleted, they're just hidden from the user, which is the nice thing about this is that this profile is completely reversible very simply. So what I did was I created a smart group called Devices Circumventing Restrictions, and so I put some criteria in there that I think I don't want to have, and one of them is jailbreak detected, and the other one was inventory is older than 4 days, right? Because in a situation where users can't delete the MDM profile, you shouldn't really be going that long without getting a device inventory. So if you are, there's something probably wrong. So what I thought was, if anybody ever appeared in the smart group, I could push this profile to them and all their apps would disappear. And that would pretty much guarantee that somebody would bring the iPad to me pretty quickly for an explanation of why this had happened. And it's nice that you can just kind of say, oh, well, okay, I can see what's going on here. You can look at it in GSS and see which of those criteria triggered this profile, and then you could probably resolve it. So that's something I'm thinking about doing. I'm not sure if I will do it or not. I think what I'll do is I'll keep the group there, and over the first couple of weeks of school, I'll just monitor who's in that group and who's out that group, and then see, well, if the group doesn't really pick up too many people, I'll probably turn that profile on because I do want to pick up the people that it does pick up.
Right, it's like you don't want it to be, it's like with filtering, you don't want it to be too aggressive, but you want it to be aggressive enough to where, you know, it does its job.
Yeah, I want to just make sure I get the criteria right, and I don't want too many false positives because then that's just extra work for me for no practical benefit. Right.
Yeah, absolutely. So, yeah. I've really had a lot of fun the past couple of days kind of working through this, and what's nice is now, is it's everything like the holding of the devices is done. Everything now is just in Casper Suite. Outside of, I got to put cases on. I found, I'll put a link in the show notes, but like I wanted some cheap cases, but it also worked. And I found a like knockoff smart case. I mean, for, I got half of them today. So ordered 175 of them just to have spares. They're $4 a piece on Amazon with Prime shipping. And it's like this, it comes with a back cover. It's a smart cover knockoff on the top. And then a back compatible back, and it actually comes with a cheapo stylus as well. But yeah, so I ordered, and it came with a screen protector, which we're not going to use. But I ordered 175 of them, and I got them today, or got part of them today, and they're pretty nice. I mean, for $4, like they're not bad. And they kind of, if you told me this was from Apple, I would probably believe you. And I went with I was trying to figure out the best color. I went with a green color, just because I felt like it would be easier to see if we were like missing one.
Yeah, glow in the dark.
Right, yeah. And so it was either that or like a light blue, and like the black I think was like $6.99. I was like, I'm not paying double the price to get black, because again, when you order 175 of them, that's a lot more money.
No, we're going for a red. We're getting the STM Dux case, which we've used on a small number of iPad minis that we've had, and we quite like that case. We're getting the Dux Plus. This has actually been a bit of a hold up with our deployment because that case is only just out. So that we got all the Pros, but we don't have any cases for the Pros yet, because even though it's sort of physically very similar to the Air 2, there's a couple of issues, one of which is that the other two speakers on the top edge, but also the iPad Pro 9.7 has got a flash on the camera as well. The folk at the store were saying, well, why not just take the one for the iPad Air 2? It's basically the same thing. And I was like, well, yeah, but if the camera is going to flash and then the part of the case is blocking the flash, all the photographs are going to be underexposed. So it's like, nah, I'm not living with that explanation for 3 years. So let's just let's wait for those new cases. Yeah,
it's like a couple of weeks of waiting just to have it right.
I got one more profile thing just to talk about really briefly, which is VShare, right? Which is VShare is basically a pirated game app store that you can download. You don't even have to jailbreak. It's distributed as a kind of enterprise app. There are ways to stop people from installing this stuff. There's basically two configuration profile options. One called disallow trusting new enterprise app authors, and one that just blocks people from installing any configuration profiles that don't come through your MDM. And I turned on and deployed both of those settings to every iPad. So hopefully that will go some way to preventing people from getting things like VShare installed or apps, cracked apps from other areas of the internet installed on the devices as well.
Yes, it's like, it's weird how like little, it's like you don't even need a specific profile for that. It's probably something a lot of people are going to turn on anyways, not even knowing that what it's protecting them from.
Yeah, and I wonder, I haven't tested this, but I wonder if that also prevents people from updating to iOS 10 public beta?
I would say so, because you have to install a profile.
Yeah, unless Apple profiles are inherently trusted, I'm not sure, but I would hope not.
Oh, well, yeah, I'd say that would be a security risk. So yeah, so that good stuff. Cool. I am going to continue my next steps with inside of my JSS, or my next steps overall are I want to have some folks help me next week, get them in cases, and then mm-hmm. I am kind of getting I've got to go through our configurator database. I've got all my VPP codes migrated over, so now I have to go through our configurator database. I actually brought that our configurator computer home with me this weekend. We're recording on Thursday, but I brought it home with me. That's what I'm going to do, like at night after my kids go to bed, is go through that mm-hmm. and start scoping apps to those device groups. So I'm going to get the device group set up and then start scoping apps to those device groups.
Yep, that's the next step. And I've still got some unboxing to do. We've got 30-odd devices coming, but I reckon I'm actually going to time it from start to finish tomorrow and see exactly how quickly we can get this done.
Yeah, only thing I'm having issues with right now, and I'm not sure, it's like I'm setting device names. Like, so when you set the asset tag, it takes it immediately because that's only in your JSS. But if you're setting the device name, like sometimes it's not taking, or it's taking a long time to take. And I don't know if it's got to like send that and then it's got to report back. And then sometimes it's like not taking.
I think if you update the inventory, that can make that happen faster.
Ah, good point. Yeah. Let me go. So.
Because that's what triggers it, when the device checks in with a name that's not the one that the JSS expects.
Yeah, and I'll do that. So yeah, good stuff. We'll be back next week, hopefully with some more good tips we found along the way as we kind of roll through this together. Thanks to our sponsors this week, Jump Software and XMA. So I'm ChambersDaily.com on the web, and I'm Bradley Chambers on Twitter.
Okay, and I'm Spears.org on the web, and Fraser Spears on Twitter.
Have a good week, everybody.